Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to I Don't Care with me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. Appreciate you joining me today. And real interesting topic that some people may not know a lot about. And so that's why I was looking for a really fine expert, and I found one. So please join me in welcoming Grant Knowles from Sendero Specialty Pharmacy to I Don't Care. Grant, welcome to I Don't Care.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
So glad to have you on. Grant, tell my audience a little bit about you, Sendero Specialty Pharmacy, and then we'll get into to some of the topics that we want to make sure that we hit.
Yeah, so I'm a pharmacist. I've been a pharmacist for the last 19 years. I've been in pharmacy for over 20 years. I started in the health plan or PBM world of pharmacy, and then slowly migrated into specialty pharmacies, helping organizations build out specialty pharmacies. And, you know, Sendero is one of the largest independent specialty pharmacies in the nation. And so we are fortunate to have the opportunity to care for a lot of individuals and help them be successful on their specialty prescriptions.
That's excellent. Okay, very good. So Grant, what makes a specialty pharmacy so different from a traditional pharmacy? And why does that really matter?
Well, you know, it's a good question. It's, for me, it's special in general. But, you know, fundamentally, you know, I think the difference is that we're not just dispensing a medication. We generally manage the therapy. And so traditional pharmacies are built for kind of high volume, where most prescriptions are generic. The interactions are brief. The insurance coverage is relatively straightforward. Specialty pharmacy is kind of the polar opposite. That these medications are high cost, often injectable or infused. They treat chronic or rare conditions and come with some significant complexities. And so specialty medications treat, you know, autoimmune diseases, oncology, multiple sclerosis, inflammatory disorders such as psoriasis and rheumatoid arthritis. They're frequently require special handling, include cold chain storage, temperature control shipping. Many are injectables or biologics. With significant side effect profiles and clinical monitoring. Additionally, there's a big cost difference in between traditional and specialty medications. Traditional medications may be $10, $50, or a few hundred dollars. Specialty medications can cost $7,000 to $14,000 or more per month. And so that magnitude changes financially, operationally, and clinically what's relevant to that therapy. And so, you know, I think it's also important to think through the mix of traditional and retail pharmacy. So in a traditional retail pharmacy, 8 to 9 out of 10 prescriptions are generics. Historically, these generics, the margins have helped offset the losses of brand name drugs. And so they call that cross-subsidization to keep that model afloat. In specialty pharmacy, that cushion really doesn't exist. Only about 1 in 10 specialty prescriptions are generic, and so there's virtually no margin buffer. So at the same time, you know, these therapies, they carry high risk of those cold chain requirements, limited access, and significant clinical and operational intensity. So, you know, patients on it, they face clinical monitoring, side effect management, you know, very often administrative burdens like prior authorizations before the therapy can even begin. And then also the added financial hurdles of deductibles, co-insurance, and accumulators that really risk the patients abandoning therapies that can have a real impact on their life. And so it matters, specialty pharmacy matters, because it adds a layer of clinical support, financial navigation, and ongoing engagement. So patients don't simply start therapy abandon therapy or stop it early. So specialty pharmacy is just a different mix. It's a different service model and different economics. And so when reimbursements in this area don't reflect the complexities, patients often have access issues.
Yeah. Well, I know pharmacological adherence is such an issue across the board. And certainly cost is a major part of that. So what do you do to help patients actually afford these medications that they so desperately need?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And, you know, often affordability is one of the largest toxicity in specialty care. And so it's rarely solved by one single lever. And so, you know, we start by understanding the patient's benefit design. So deductible, co-insurance, pre-authorization requirements, and then layer in manufacturer assistance programs, foundation support, and other funding options when they're available. Because we're large enough, and we fill over 400,000 specialty prescriptions a year, we actually have teams devoted to removing financial barriers to help the patients. And so, you know, we know studies consistently show that roughly 23-25% of patients either delay, abandon, or discontinue therapy because of the toxicities, the financial toxicities. And we see it seasonally. So every year, deductibles reset, and we observe about 23% increase in patients who suddenly become eligible for financial assistance, meaning they can go from a $0 copay in December to thousands of dollars of out-of-pocket expense in January. So that means about one in every four patients encounters a new affordability barrier in the first quarter. So, you know, if you're not tracking or intervening, these patients can fall off. And it's a very real decision about cost. And so we don't just connect patients to assistance once, but we monitor it over time. Specialty medications are chronic therapies. So if assistance expires, coverage shifts, and no one catches it, you know, there could potentially be an access issue. So we use analytics. We follow how well we're connecting. And so we, on average, connect patients with assistance 93-94% of the time. And so we do really well there. But it's important to track those trends. And so our goal isn't just to reduce the out-of-pocket cost once, is to create predictability mm-hmm. and trust so that patients feel safe staying on the therapy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you brought up a topic that my wife and I just faced over the last month. You know, January, it's kind of a shocker for some people because you do have to meet those new deductibles.
Yeah.
And those medications that were zero copay a couple of weeks ago come up. And you know, in our instance, a couple of those meds were, you know, a couple hundred dollars a month. Unfortunately for us, that's not that big of a deal. But that's such a barrier for so many people. Let's talk a little bit about the cost of pharmaceuticals as a whole, too. I spent some time in my career with one of the largest pharmaceutical distributors and on the generic medication side. And so got to learn a lot about that. And you know, Grant, you and I both know that once you're in healthcare, everybody you know start asking you questions about, you know, all aspects of healthcare. One of the things that I get asked a lot about is, why do drugs cost so much? Yeah, and I go into the whole discussion about, you know, research and development costs, and the fact that the vast majority of drugs that go into R&D never see the light of day. And so there has to be an offset for those expenses. And people just typically, you know, they don't either consider that or they haven't even thought about that. You know, kind of what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, as a pharmacist and being centralized in this, you know, area of focus, I think, you know, I think I always like to start as a, that I think drugs in the world of healthcare, so pharmaceuticals, have mm-hmm. one of the best ROIs out of any aspect of healthcare. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, it's so personal to so many Americans because prescriptions are the most used form of benefit of healthcare. Mm-hmm. Across the United States. And so on average, you know, folks take one prescription per month on average. Some more, some zero, but on average, it's the most used. And so I think it's relatable to people, and the costs that come from them are the ones that are most often felt. And so I think that's kind of one of the things that pulls up a lot of the emotions, and it's more real because it's more relatable. But I have to think is that, you know, from a science and technology side, is that there are a lot of improvements. I mean, the hepatitis C has a cure now that's tolerable, that can be managed, where we've progressed with containing autoimmune conditions to where people can have a normal or as close to as normal life. I think there's been a lot of advancements. Now the cost, you know, I think there's a lot of factors, and I think, you know, I feel like there's a lot of, and I do it sometimes too, is, you know, a lot of armchair quarterbacking where we may not have the complete pictures of the complexities of these medications. And so there are different aspects. There are different sharks under the water financially, whether you're talking about how PBMs and manufacturers work together, how pharmacies and PBMs work together. And so there are different aspects that I think conflate what the real cost of these medications are. But I think what's never out of sight is that the patient's the middle of this. And they're always the one who is subject to the higher cost of it. And so I think it's a challenging concept. But I see, you know, aspects of the argument on all sides that make sense. I do know that we're probably likely going to see some reimbursement restructurings in the next 5 to 10 years, just in pharmacy in general. And I think we've seen some pieces and news around FTC comments and reports calling out some concerns. But I would tend to argue is that that's fundamentally how a lot of the healthcare system is designed to work today. And so I'm hopeful that some of those changes may happen. But I'm also cautious that it's not just a reaction based off of fear, but also used our, I guess, but it's not a reaction just, Yeah, it's just not a blatant reaction.
Yeah,
well thought through.
Sure, totally understand. Okay, we talked a lot about cost as being a barrier for some folks, but there are a lot of different reasons why people choose not to take their medications. So, what are the biggest challenges in getting those patients their medications on time and making sure that they adhere to that therapy outside of cost?
Yeah, it's a really good question. You know, I think if I look at it from my seat and what we see is, you know, one of the biggest challenges is it's a coordination of a fragmented system, right? Is that like a single prescription can involve a prescriber, a health plan, a PBM, a manufacturer, their hub, a specialty pharmacy, and the patient. And they all generally operate on different systems and have different incentives. You know, delays happen when information doesn't move cleanly across the parties or when requirements change mid-process or plan resets. And so a pharmacy, especially pharmacy specifically, it's like the quarterback. They're the most utilized point, like we discussed, of healthcare in the country, which are uniquely positioned to act as that coordinator or that quarterback. And so we often become the central hub, connecting all of those stakeholders and helping to navigate through the administrative burdens, the financial burdens, the clinical aspects of it. So, like, I think that's one of the big challenges is that I always tell folks in our industry is that specialty medications is 50% clinical and 50% administrative. And it's in both of those have to come together to have patient success. And so keeping patients on therapy is that additional layer is helping them manage side effects, the financial fatigues, life changes, even improvements in symptoms can lead patients to disengage.
Yeah.
And so developing systems to be proactive is helpful. And so many specialty pharmacies like us, we use validated patient reported outcome measures. And so they're structured surveys that correlate directly with in-office diagnostic tests, monitoring clinical disease markers. These tools allow us to detect when therapies may be failing or when a patient's disease burden is worsening. Now, it could be a medication failure or it could be due to lack of adherence, but it gives us the opportunity to engage that patient. And so when we see those signals, we communicate them with the prescribers, we check in with the patients. In many cases, these disease states, there are, you know, now multiple therapeutic options. And so identifying a lack of effectiveness, whether it's due to adherence or due to the patient losing or the medication losing efficacy, we can help that patient connect with the right medication and prevent waste. And so I think that ongoing engagement and data-driven monitoring helps us get the patient started and continue to monitor them. So I think it's complex.
Yeah, it really is. You know, and in today's environment, you know, with the internet and the access to information and you know, drug manufacturers advertising on television, you know, trying to bring in more business, and then people looking up that specific information. You know, I know a lot of my physician buddies just hate it whenever they have a patient come in with a stack of information from the internet. But, you know, I'm all for a patient being informed, but there's a lot of competing noise out there. You know, and I know in my personal healthcare journey, I've got a number of physicians. I'm at that age. You know, I've got that cardiologist, I've got the GI guy, I've got the ortho, I got them all, including my primary care guy. And so, you know, a lot of people are prescribing medications for me, and my other providers may not know. And so I think a lot, you know, for me, you know, the pharmacist is an incredible resource as that clearinghouse for all of my medications to know, hey, there's a contraindication for this one med if you're taking this med and all that. So, you know, that's another thing about specialty pharmacies and about even a retail pharmacist as well. You know, using them as that resource to help make sure that, you know, the medications that you're on are actually doing what they should be doing and not adversely affecting another one. Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a big part of what we do. You know, and it's, you know, on your comment about people knowing more, I look at the knowledge as better engagement and sure. getting individuals to understand their medications, their disease is part of a process is that they can be more active participants in their healthcare. And I think, you know, that leads to accurate answers on these patient-reported outcome measures, leads to better medication histories, better disease histories, so that we can get the complete history. You know, and a lot of this information is really migrated is that it doesn't necessarily need me or you to review it, is we have systems in place that really help us highlight the opportunity to engage those patients when there could be an issue.
Okay, very good. So let's kind of transition into the next topic that, you know, in my world now and advising a bunch of different companies, it seems like everybody, doesn't seem like it is, everybody's involved in some aspect of technology, AI. So what are y'all doing? How do you use technology or AI or whatever to improve the patient experience in specialty pharmacy?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. It's something that we, you know, I personally toil with is, you know, AI feels like you're about ready to compete in the Olympics. And I don't even feel like I'm getting out of high school yet in a lot of these aspects. And so, but it is a crucial part. And I think it has to be directly tied to supporting workflow and building value for the patient. And so, you know, just in general, we're working to leverage technology to reduce frictions, you know, things like fewer redundant calls, smarter outreaches, better visibility, clearer communications. You know, I think what's interesting is if we think about kind of society as a whole, as far as healthcare, is that consumer and patient's behavior has changed, right? And nearly 98% of text messages are opened within minutes, right? While less than 30% of people are picking up the phone, right? So I think it's, you know, technology is shifting to increasingly meet where patients want to be. And I think healthcare is changing for that. You know, I think if we looked at the gold standard in every healthcare interaction, it's face-to-face in the same room, right? And then it migrated to phone. And then now it's migrating to text or apps mm-hmm. or other pieces. And so I think that through these messaging and digital engagements, we still need to preserve some of that human mm-hmm. access when it's needed. But I think patients won't engage mm-hmm. in the old way, right? And so you have to create a meaningful experience where they see the value. And so on the clinical side, you know, it's leveraging the same thing, but putting it in a more accessible digital piece. So leveraging the automation through either the message or documentation or making it faster so that they engage in the way they want to. You know, I think if you look at Amazon's return policy, like if you've ever returned anything on Amazon, it's super easy. It's just like return, done. And if we would have thought about that, you know, back in the day, it's like calling somebody to get a return that took a lot. And then once we saw the value in that, people started using that. And so I think there are aspects of this that will be hard for healthcare to break away from. But I think we have to always keep in mind is that patient engagement is shifting. And if we are losing the engagement of the patients, then we have to transition into these messaging, into these app bases. And we have to shift into how can we do the same, but then, you know, elevate to that human access when it's needed. And so I'm really excited about it. You know, I think our goal isn't to replace people. It's to use technology to amplify that human care.
Yeah. Well, I know I rely on my PBM app all the time to remind me of, hey, yeah, your prescription is expiring. Contact your primary care doc. Or sometimes it even does it for me, which is even better. I really appreciate that. But, you know, as you're saying, healthcare is having to evolve. And even with lab results, you know, as a patient, I'm getting my lab results now on my app before I even talk to my physician about it. And, you know, 5-10 years ago, that was unheard of. You know, your physician didn't want you to have that information before they talked to you about it. But now, you know, it gives me an opportunity to, and I'm a little bit more sophisticated than most healthcare consumers. But it gives me an opportunity to take a look at my results prior to, so I can have some salient questions that I can ask of my physician when I go next week. So yeah, I'm doing the same thing in pharma.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that engagement. I mean, you're more engaged because you have the information up front, and I believe that it reduces the number of outreaches of where's my labs. You know, it may ask more questions, but it increases that engagement, which I'm thankful for. I mean, that visibility, I think, helps improve the patient's chances for success.
Yeah, I totally agree. Okay, so we talked about specialty pharmacy, and thanks so much for helping to educate my audience on that if they weren't really familiar with it. But where do you see specialty pharmacy going over the next few years? What's really changing in and about that?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, specialty pharmacy, you know, if I had a crystal ball, I think it's gonna see some reimbursement changes, dispensing model. You know, I think it's shifting a little bit to a value model and having more transparency. You know, like you've seen with kind of your labs, I think stakeholders are no longer going to be satisfied with, you know, was the medication shipped? They're asking, you know, did the patients start on therapy? Did outcomes improve? Are they wasting medications? How do you know they're adherent? You know, how do you know that they're not hoarding medications of a $12,000 medication every month? Additionally, we're seeing, you know, increasing complex benefit design. So copay maximizers, accumulators, alternate funding programs, as payers try to look for control of that cost that they see with these medications. So while specialty pharmacies don't necessarily design these programs, we're often responsible for helping patients navigate some of the operational fallout and complexities they create. You know, at the same time, you know, I talked in the very beginning, is I'm hopeful that we're going to approach some necessary resetting of the reimbursement of pharmacy in general. With generic margins compressing and the patent cliff behind us, the historical cross-subsidization model no longer is sustainable for, you know, in my opinion, traditional pharmacy and specialty pharmacy. So we're beginning to see some of the, you know, rather large and mid-sized payers have already started doing this, rethinking the decades-old reimbursement model structures and acknowledging some real cost to serves in specialty pharmacy with cost-plus models, with better transparency. And so I see continued growth in, you know, some of the cheaper biosimilars that have come out, the cost plus models, and contracting structures that really reward transparency, kind of the persistence of the medications, the outcomes, rather than just a pure volume. And so, you know, as we've discussed here, is data transparency is becoming a non-negotiable. And so pharmacies will need to prove their impact and not just claim it, right? And I think that's where we're seeing our organization. So where our philosophy comes in is we believe that, you know, right now is that we're large enough to scale, but we're small enough to care. And so I hope we can continue that in investing in the analytics, the technology, our contracting sophistication, without ever losing sight of that individual patient experience. And so I feel like specialty pharmacy is migrating to that value piece of it, while continuing to keep all of those patients' interactions, while it may look different, but keep that patient at the center.
Yeah, well, I think that's great. I mean, we've talked so much about that, and about the ability for pharmacies to manage this information, you know, not only for the patient, but frankly for the physicians too, because so many physicians are incentivized on the medication adherence of their patients, and so they have to know the same things that, you know, that the payers know. It's kind of become incumbent upon you guys to make sure that that happens for them as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of interdependencies.
Yeah. And
so I think over the last, you know, 5 years, I've been really impressed with the interoperability that has been kind of laid out. I don't necessarily understand it all, but I mean, it's helpful, you know, to see information sharing and the access between healthcare professionals become more accessible so that, you know, the information can flow. And so I think, you know, while healthcare in some regards is fragmented, I think it's getting better. And we're getting better from a technology piece to talk to each other.
I would greatly agree with that as well. Hey, Grant, any final last words from my folks?
I think just like with a lot of healthcare organizations, I'm happy to be a part of an organization where so many people rally around the patient. You know, it's corny to say, but, you know, I sit at a different point of view than a lot of the people do in our organization. We have over 800 people, and I'm not necessarily directly focused on the patient, but everybody impacts it. And so I'm Kevin, I'm sure you've had direct patient engagement and then also kind of an administrative. And it's really fun to be in organizations where everybody is aligned, everybody does something different, but everybody's really rallying around how we can support the patient. So I just think it's specialty pharmacy is a fun aspect of healthcare.
That's great. That's great to hear. Well, Grant, I really appreciate you joining me today in enlightening me and my audience a little bit more about the benefits of specialty pharmacy. So thank you for that.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Grant Knowles with Sendara Specialty Pharmacy. Thanks for joining me today on I Don't Care with me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. I appreciate all of you joining me, and we will see you next time. Take care.